Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. If anybody is here and they're listening maybe in for the first time, my name again is Peter Mingles. We do this radio show every Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time with a good friend of ours. His name is always Scott Johnson. And the way Building Fortunes Radio got started was, I don't know how many years ago, because depending on when you're listening to this, if you're listening to the archive audio, it started off towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013, and I wanted to do it and develop it on a brand or a platform that I owned, because I wanted to be able to say the things that I wanted to say, and I didn't ever want to give my ownership, if you will, of this content to anyone else. So that's why we don't do it in a lot of other places, because as you're learning in 2021, you can be censored out or canceled out, and I didn't want that. So, and also knew that we were going to talk about some things that were popular or maybe even unpopular with some people. So I wanted to be able to own and control a lot of our own content. So we started this a long time ago, and when Scott Johnson came on board, it started off as a conference call that I did. I'm sorry, a radio show that I did with a gentleman named Roger Van Blissingen, who was writing with an article or with a domain name called Seeking Alpha. So if you go to seekingalpha.com, they write stuff about publicly traded companies. And this gentleman was writing stuff that was really good, meaning like you see that smart, that this gentleman, Roger, could sling sentences together the right way at a complex thought process. He was intellectual. And he was honest and fair, and I was reading some of the stuff that he was writing, and I said, hey, could you be on our radio show and talk about some of the legitimate concerns that you have on network marketing? So we did that, and that was a good thing because it prompted Scott Johnson to find that call, and Scott called me up, and he said, hey, Peter, you know, I listened to that, and, you know, Roger made some great points, but there's something that nobody talks about. And I'm like, what's that, Scott? And he says, you know, the tool scam associated with MLM. And I had been associated with MLM and the Amway business specifically prior to the conversation I had, obviously, with Scott. But the tool scam was one thing that I always associated with Amway. But I didn't know if what Scott was talking about was the same thing that I was talking about. So I let him start talking, and eventually we got to the point of, hey, Scott, do you have a website? Which, by the way, is still there. He says, sure do. It's called Stop the Amway Tool Scam. .wordpress.com. So that's when I knew that I was talking about the same tool scam that he was talking about, and we've been doing this radio show ever since. Now, many times we do updates and news and fun stuff or not so fun stuff on our own. We've talked about everything from pyramid schemes to Ponzi schemes to stuff with, believe it or not, child sex trafficking to Scientology and other religious things and cult-like behavior. So we've had a whole bunch of things because there's a lot of similarities in the business model between some of the things that I just mentioned. And then sometimes we have guests. And it's always kind of neat when we have some guests because we get their perspective as well from being here. So I'm going to kind of step out of our way, and I'm going to introduce Scott Johnson. Say, Scott, thanks for being here, and I'll let you introduce your guest. Scott's usually the one that brings the guests on, which is really kind of cool. And, Scott, I'm going to say thanks for all the things that you do, and thanks for being here. And the show is now over to you.
Well, Peter, thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it. And this show is really yours because you do all the work behind the scenes. I just get on the telephone once a week and talk for an hour to an hour and a half, and we have a good time. And, in fact, speaking of good time, I'm looking, and I don't know if our guest is on the Internet right now, but, John, if you go to flaglerbeach.tv,
yep.
That's F-L-A-G-L-E-R, flaglerbeach.tv. If you're on a computer in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little place where it says Critter Cam. Or if you're on your phone, you just kind of scroll down till you find it. But that's Peter's backyard live. And he accidentally drops food. He accidentally drops food every night, and the raccoons come around, and they eat it. So, you know, he doesn't have to worry about the food accumulating. And it's interesting tonight, Peter, because It looks like you've got some maybe storms or at least some wind in the area, and the raccoons are kind of skittish right now. I've seen them a couple times, and then they run away. I guess there's like rustling in the leaves, and they get, you know, nervous and run away. And they're away right now. And actually, there's one there right now, I think, or maybe a couple of them. Yeah, there's a couple of them maybe. And you can't see them real well until they sort of face the camera and you can see their beady eyes. So, two little white dots. Anyway, we have fun. FlaglerBeach.tv, Critter Cam. And just to kind of follow up what you were saying earlier on the tool scam, you know, what we're talking about here, particularly with Amway, and it happens with some other MLMs too, it's really not universal across MLMs like the other major problem is that I'll mention in a minute. But the tool scam, particularly on Amway, it's the biggest, you know, profitable, intricate, whatever you want to call it, comprehensive, you know, whatever adjective you want to use. It's, to me, it's the best, worst one. And what we're talking about with the tool scam is the upline charges for various meetings, you know, tickets to go to small, medium, and large meetings, books, recordings, voicemail, website access, phone apps. There's all kinds of ways that they train and motivate their downline. And I don't really have a big issue with the content of it, although, you know, I don't agree with anybody on everything. So it's not like there has to be universal agreement for me to say that's pretty good content. I may not agree with everything, but overall I find it to be pretty good from my perspective. But the real problem is they don't like to talk about how much money they make from the tools. And it's pretty obvious why, because if they told you how much money they made and the fact that you have to get to the platinum level, which is roughly about 100 people in your downline, you won't get paid until you get to that level. And so most people probably would not be willing to pay into something until they get 100 people in their downline, and just paying into it and paying into it and paying into it. It just wouldn't work. They would quit and the whole business would collapse because it's, you're really counting on those new people coming in. And even though there's a lot of churn, there's also always some new growth at the bottom. So, you know, you have to have those people. Once that lowest level leaves, then the next level up, they don't like it because now they're at the lowest level and it would just, you know, go up forest fire in a forest, you know, just burn the branches from the bottom up. So that's the tool scam. And so when you see these upline talking about all their goodies, you know, their lifestyle, their mansions, their yachts, their jets, their motor coaches, yada, yada, yada. Most of it came from the tools. When we're talking like 90%. And there's actual examples of these people after they get out. Of course, they won't talk about it while they're in, but after they get out, they talk about how much money they made from the tools. And usually they're not trying to brag about it. Usually they're, they're trying to make a point that they joined a new MLM. And these are my words. When they join a new MLM, they don't have to scam their downline with the tools anymore. You know, they stay a little bit more friendly than that, but that's the bottom line. And so, you know, that's what we're talking about when we talk about the tool scam. Now, the other major problem that I see, and this is more universal across all or at least most MLMs, I just haven't found one that I can say I feel confident they have lots of retail sales. And when we say lots, there's no particular law that defines the minimum, unfortunately. I think that's an unfortunate thing because now it's open to interpretation. And even though the FTC has gone after a small handful of companies over the years, and generally not for having hardly any retail sales, there's no real minimum bar defined. But usually when they get involved with an MLM, if they don't just flat shut down or drop their MLM model like Advocare did a couple years ago, or go to court, you know, usually they'll settle. And usually the settlement is something around 50%. So what we're saying here is if you sell as much as you consume in your own household, and everybody does that, of course everybody won't, but let's say 80% do that, then the FTC would consider that to be a legitimate MLM. Whereas most MLMs probably have somewhere in the lower single-digit percentages, like 5% or less of retail sales. And what we're talking about with retail sales are sales outside of the network, you know, to customers, people that are also not distributors, just real customers, someone that would go to a store and buy something, but they buy it from you. But they don't have the added incentive of being a distributor and trying to build volume from their own purchases and from other customers and from downline. They just buy the product because they think it's worth the cost. And because most MLM products are grossly overpriced, that leads to almost no retail sales. And so that's the real major problem that across all MLMs, or at least most of them, and then ones like Amway also have on top of that the tool scam, which I consider to be even more of a problem because of the impacts that that creates. So anyway, that's just a quick overview of how I view MLM and what I think the major issues are. Of course, there's other issues too, but we could go on forever talking about other issues. And actually, non-MLM businesses have issues too, some small, some large. So, I'm not trying to say I'm trying to make MLM perfect. I'm just saying that these are two very imperfect things. And if we fix these, then life would be much better. It would be actually a legitimate business. But I think that they can't do it in most cases. I think if MLMs were required to have retail sales, like I mentioned, 50-50 or more, they just wouldn't survive because the company would have to reduce the product's price so much that they would make so much less profit, it wouldn't be worth it. Or they would also have to reduce the bonus, and so the distributors would also get paid less, and they would find that it's not worth it. So so the whole thing would collapse, I think, if most MLMs were forced to do it right. And I think that's what got AdvoCare changing from their MLM model to just direct sales. They said, hey, we just don't, and I don't know what the inside story, but I believe they said, we just don't see how we can make a profit of this thing if we reduce the prices enough. We're not going to make a profit. There's not going to be enough bonus money for the distributors, and they're just going to all quit. So let's just go to direct sales. And our guest and I were talking about this a little bit last week, and I actually it piqued my curiosity because I'd actually been thinking about doing this and never just got around to doing it. But AdvoCare, a couple years before it was shut down, it maxed out at around $750 million, so three-quarters of $1 billion, excuse me, which puts it up in the pretty high in the, MLM ranks. There's only a handful of MLMs greater than $1 billion a year. And so it really puts them next to that top tier, I would say, volume. And then it went down for a year or two, down to about a half a billion. And I think what was going on there was they were changing the deal, trying to accommodate the FTC. And then finally they said, there just isn't enough here. And they went to full direct sales. So there's no upline, no downline. There's really no need to have tools anymore because there's no incentive to sell tools. If you don't have a downline to sell them to, who's going to buy them? It's only what you can sell to retail customers. That's the only income you can make. And today, the volume that they have is about 50 million. So we're talking about less than 10% of what they were at their peak when they went from MLM to direct sales. So you can be pretty sure there weren't too many retail sales going on with AdvoCare. So anyway, we've got a great guest, Peter. I've talked with John over the last week or two, and he just has a great story and a great insight into what's happening here. And John, I'll let you introduce yourself. Just start out with, where you started, what you were doing when you were approached by Amway, any other background information you'd like to give about your upbringing or just, whatever you think is interesting. But welcome and go right ahead.
Sure. And Scott and Peter, I certainly appreciate the invite to be on the show. So I always enjoy sharing the experience. You know, to really start with my Amway story, I got approached with the opportunity at a very young age. I was a senior in high school, and my best friend at the time, we'd always butt heads about business, and we didn't really see eye to eye, and he was talking about something called Quickstar at the time. So to really spite him, I decided to go check this out, and I was approached by my sponsor at the time, who quit shortly thereafterwards. And I remember there was a spring leadership function 2 weeks from the first meeting I was at, and I had made plans to go to my senior year prom. Well, they were trying to convince me to go to spring leadership instead. I was kind of on the fence, and they backed off. So, you know, I was plugged in. I had made some calls. And to me, when I saw the Amway plan, I was really excited. You know, they dumbed it down. They sold it as the opportunity that, you know, not necessarily myself, but I know people that, you know, needed household goods and vitamins and minerals and, you know, all the other stuff. And I really thought it would be a 5 hour a week gig. I'd go talk to some people, sponsor six, who could sponsor four, who could sponsor two. And they sold it as an opportunity to go make $2,000 or $3,000 a month very quickly. So I was really jacked up and was talking to my high school friends, teachers, you name it. Well, as I went along, I soon found out that they were investing or recruiting me for the tool scam. All of a sudden, you know, I was pressured into being on the standing order tape program. I was paying for, I think it was called Amvox, where you would get voicemails from your uplines, and the travel. And, you know, I went to my first function. That was FED in July in Cincinnati. So we all rode the bus. And it was at the function that I figured out the secret sauce about the business. I was in the Brit Worldwide group with Larry Winters and Joe Markowitz. And I was an 18-year-old, and I'd, you know, go to the Sunday morning service, and you'd see people, you know, come up and save themselves to Jesus. So that's where I really then became brainwashed. I, you know, said, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do for life. I'm not only, you know, having my own business, my own opportunity, but this is going to be my ministry. And I was all in. So to make a long story short, you know, I'm a freshman in college. I would go around and, you know, was not a socially acceptable guy. Was ultra right-wing Christian, and when somebody would reject my business, you know, I would absolutely resort to name-calling. I'd be on the phone with people who didn't show up to meetings, and I remember one time the upline told me to go flush the toilet and tell them that's the sound of you guys being flushed. So you can imagine the type of manipulation. So I'll fast forward. You know, my parents were very concerned. A young kid spending his money. Grades in school weren't great, and I've never been a big guy in education. And so I wake up one day, and I had been in about a year and a quarter now. So this would have been June of 2001. And my parents had hired a very famous cult deprogrammer named Rick Ross. And he was very expensive. He flew in from Phoenix. And I awoke, and Rick was in my, when I was home from college. And at first I said, oh gosh, you know, I wanted to run away, but I said, you know, I'm really going to take Rick on and prove to Rick this is a good business opportunity. And so for the next 2 or 3 days, Rick and I really butted heads, but he was starting to have some doubts. Or he was starting to cause myself to really doubt this business. We did a phone call with a couple out of Cincinnati who has a very toxic upline. And, you know, the Amway business caused a divorce. She was counseled to leave her husband. And then what got me was Rick read 10 warning signs of a cult. And as he was reading down this list, every single statement, the check mark hit the box. I mean, it was not even close. The light bulb goes off. And all of a sudden, I said, wow, this is a very toxic business. This is something that I need to exit and get out. So the question is, when I left, you know, my upline was absolutely terrible. I'd hear things like Satan was in my head. I was disappointing my downline, which maybe was 4 or 5 distributors that were in my organization. But what I committed to do was I wanted to say, all right, I heard all these crazy promises. I heard about diamonds being backed up by diamonds on the Des Moines team. I want to stick with these guys over the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and follow up and look at what's going to happen decades later. So that's really my story. And that's what I've done is taken a look back at these businesses and just found utter financial devastation, divorces, you name it, by what the Amway business has caused.
Yeah, thanks, John. And you also have some insight because I think when you were with your upline, Larry Winters was still underneath Bill Britt, but then something happened that caused Winters to break off, and if you can kind of go through that, because it's kind of an interesting story. I've heard some of it, but I didn't hear another part of it, so go right ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, at the time, you know, the tool and motivational system was Britt Worldwide, which was ran by Bill and Peggy Britt. And then Bill Britt's largest leg was Paul Miller, who was a Crown. Very famous guy. He was a UNC quarterback back in the late 60s. And, you know, at the functions, Paul Miller was just an articulate speaker. He was probably my favorite guy to really listen to. And, you know, he'd run the Sunday worship service, put out tapes. Came out in about 2004 that he was having a longtime affair with his secretary, who was Leslie Randolph. And what's even more crazy is Debbie Miller was, you know, and this is alleged, the Paul Miller thing happened because he left Debbie and remarried his secretary, but Debbie was supposed to have been out cheating at the same time. So during this period of chaos, Larry Winters took the ball and said, screw it. I now want to start my own business support material system and use the affairs. And at the same time, Bill Britt was alleged to have had an affair, was running around with a Ponte Vedra Beach real estate lady. Larry used these incidences to leave, and he started up LTD, which is Leadership Team Development. And from what I gather, his income went 10x. You know, I have no doubt that Larry is a very strong executive diamond that was making multiple sevens. From what I understand now and looking at the math, he's making multiple 8 figures. He literally, in my opinion, 10x'd his income by starting up his own and leaving the Britt Worldwide organization.
Yeah, and that's happened other times too. In fact, my upline, Don Wilson, broke away from Dexter Yeager. And I think usually when this type of thing happens, it's because they realize they can make a whole lot more money if they owned, as you said, the BSM, business support materials, which is the tools. But if they own that, they make a lot more than if they just get, you know, paid for it like an employee from their upline. And I think that's another reason that they break away is they realize, gee, you know, my upline's raking in the dough. And maybe they even asked them for a bigger cut and they said no. And so they just said, well, I'm just going to start my own because it's worth the extra work, right? To me, it doesn't make any sense unless you can make a lot more money at it, because it is a lot of work to put it together and you know, do all that stuff. And so you may as well, when your business gets big enough, like Larry Winters did, you may as well do it your own, you know, whether Paul and his wife are running around each other or not.
It made financial sense.
Maybe that's what caused it to sort of happen, but, you know, the incentive was already there, I think.
You know, I think on our last call that we brought this up, but, you know, I have approached many distributors who have been in business for 5, 10, 15 years, and I've asked them, I said, do you have any idea how much revenue LTD brings in off of business support materials? So we were running some numbers. The last count that I had was they had about 20,000 people plugged in attending functions, and the number is somewhere around $300 or $400 a month. Let's lowball it. That's $6 million a month of revenue, $72 million a year that LTD, give or take, I think I'm within about 10 or 20% of the number, $72 million that Larry's organization is taking in. There's no way their cost is even close. With the downloads today, they probably had to buy a software system, invest in technology, and you know, a 20,000 seat arena like Freedom Hall in Louisville is only $150,000 to $200,000 to rent out for the weekend. So these guys are banking it, and they have no idea. They've never sat down to follow the trail of money that's associated with the BSMs.
Yeah, and they certainly don't, like I said earlier in the call, they don't talk about it. They pretend that all of their success came from Amway, so a lot of people don't even suspect it. You know, but
right.
You're very smart to sort of run the numbers in your head, and just to confirm what your estimates are, I've got several examples from all kinds of different decades, all different lines of sponsorship, because the toll prices are pretty much the same across the board. There's some differences. For example, Worldwide Dream Builders used to sell their tapes and CDs for $2.50 versus, you know, $6 to $8, which is typical from the other lines of sponsorship. But then they charge $40 per month to get access to the website to order those $2.50 tapes or CDs, whereas the other organizations may have charged, you know, $10 a month. And so if you do the math, it comes out to about the same total dollars when you add up the access fee plus the tool prices. Now, it looks better because they're cheaper, because they can brag, oh,
yeah,
our tools are so much cheaper than these other lines of sponsorship. But then they don't throw in the fact that the website access was a lot more expensive. So there's lots of ways that there's smoke and mirrors to cover things up. And certainly the, you know, the claims from these other former IBOs back up exactly what you're saying. You know, there's people out there saying, oh yeah. For example, Owen Woodward said, yeah, my Emeralds and Above made 4 to 5 times more from the tools than they did from Amway. Or Brig Hart said, yeah, I made, you know, maybe just under $1 million a year from Amway, but I made $8 to $10 million from the tools. And this is in an interview that he gave to a newspaper. You know, so it's not me making the numbers up. I'm not inventing anything here. I'm just saying, hey, look what this guy said. Look what this guy said. And they're all saying essentially the same thing, that the tools business is much more lucrative than the Amway business. Now, that's for them. It's a source of massive loss for most people. And let me back you up into your year and a quarter when you were in Amway. I was just curious, how many, you know, distributors did you have in your downline, and did they do their volume, and did you guys do a lot of retail sales? Tell me about that part of it.
Yeah, so, you know, at the height when I left, I had about 5 distributors through about 2 different legs that was in my downline. You know, I was, most of my downline was sponsored in my last 6 months. So I think I reached about 1,000 PV, but no, everybody only did their personal volume. You know, I was never counseled to really go out and recruit clients or other retail volume. And did I have any idea what the numbers were or that the scam was for me to go unknowingly recruit others to bring in money to the tool scam, which I was not being paid out. So the answer was about five. And I had about five IBOs that were attending functions and going to the meetings and on standing order tape program.
And was that like everybody in your downline was active like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, there were people that were coming and going, but you know, I mean, I think I'd sponsored maybe 12 or 15, but I had five who were active. I had five that were attending functions.
Yeah, that's a pretty high percentage, actually. Now, what did the upline tell you about retail sales? Were they just silent on it, or did they tell you, you know, anything about retail sales?
You know, this is really funny. So the guy who was two up from me, he never really touched it. But then he would tell me that he says, you know, sometimes I'm short on business volume, or sometimes I have to buy over to get into a leadership function or buy my upline over. So I'll just order vitamins and flush it down the toilet. Who cares? It's PV. That was their attitude. I heard that many times. Just flush it down the toilet.
Yeah, and actually when you get high enough in volume, it actually makes business sense to do exactly what you said. Because it costs very little money. You know, let's say you're at the direct, you know, platinum level and you're pulling in, well, actually at the platinum level, it's not a good example because once you hit platinum, you're not required to have retail sales. So let's say you're at the silver level, you're pulling in maybe $2,000 a month, you know, but you're just at that $7,500 level. You're not, you know, you're not platinum yet. And so you still have to have retail sales. Well, if you don't get your 50 PV or 10 customers in a month, that this is every month, then you don't get your downline volume bonus. So, you know, if you bought $50 worth of vitamins and flushed them down the toilet, or I should say 50 PV, and flushed them down the toilet, that's about a $200, maybe $200, maybe 250 back in 2000, 50 PV was around $200+. Then you're actually spending 200 to make 2000. No, who would not do that, right?
Right. Well, and now that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it actually makes business sense to do exactly that. I mean, you could actually give them away too. You could give them to charity or something. Why flush them down the toilet would be my question. But yeah, I mean, it really does make sense to do that. So it sounds like there was just very little or no. I know my upline, they would talk about retail sales, but it was, and I've mentioned this before in the show, it was like my mother used to make tea. You know, she would save her tea bags. And she'd dip them in there real quick and, you know, dip them in the hot water. And that was her tea. You know, it wasn't very strong. And that's about how much they emphasized retail sales was. They kind of mentioned it in passing, but never really checked up on people, never really. In fact, not only did they not verify it, they explicitly taught us how to go into the computer and take 50 PV of our own personal purchases and convert it into retail sales by putting in a fake name or, you know, some relative's or friend's name or, you know, whatever, just to make it look like from the computer standpoint that there are retail sales in order to get our downline volume bonus. And so, you know, that's what's taught. And it wasn't just my little group because, you know, one of the key aspects of Amway and probably most other MLMs is that of duplication. So you can be pretty sure if one group is doing it, a lot of groups are doing it, because that's just the way they roll. Duplication is key as far as how these MLMs are run. And Peter, let me bring you in if you have any comments or questions. Do you have anything you'd like to add or ask?
It's all great information. The things that I always get attracted to is the personal price that people pay relative to this. So I want to focus a little bit on the cult-like nature and the cult-like tendencies and the cult-like price that John paid. And you mentioned that I'll let you finish my sentences, but you mentioned that your family actually had to bring in somebody to help deprogram you.
Yes, no, that is correct. So, you know, I've since connected with a lot of former Amway guys, you know, that had been in for 4 or 5 years, and certainly Scott's experience about being in for about 15 years. You know, the question is, why 20 years later am I so curious? And if I were to pick a year of my life that I can remember the most, it was the year in Amway. It was all the emotions. It was wanting to please my upline. It was, you know, these group of men, you know, I was 18, probably the guys I were associating with were about 10 years older. And, you know, I really can't describe it into words other than the fact that if I were to make a diary 20 years later, I could give you dates of functions. I could tell you that on the first Tuesday night in August of 2000, I was at a Joe Markowitz night owl, or I was at this Village Inn at this time and this point. And socially, it really cost me a lot in college. These guys were very right-wing. I would burn a lot of bridges with my friends, and, you know, it really took me years to lay back and to understand people, listen, to accept diverse ideas. So I really spent my college years as a loner, and I point to that Amway experience as one of those things where, you know, you're taught that everybody else is losers, the world is out to get you. And, you know, I agree with a lot about the formal education system having flaws. You know, I've been an entrepreneur and self-employed since I was 22. I became self-employed shortly after I left. But there was some great classes at Lincoln. You know, there was probably some professors that I should have not have discounted. And I really think I would have been further enough ahead had I been more open-minded. So, yeah, the effects of that. I would say it took a good decade to come out of that year and a quarter of the indoctrination and brainwashing.
So a lot of the, as like follow-up questions, a lot of the principles or philosophies that you were told were very mind control-like, I'm sure. So the idea
yes.
that school is no good, you know, you only be rich if you own your own business, passive income with Amway, you know what I mean? You have to be a business owner. You have to be committed, you know, it's got to be 100% this. I remember there was an expression that I learned, 99% loyal to the Amway products is 100% disloyal, which was weird, you know, and, you know, all the cliches that they come around. But there's a lot of really perverse, twisted philosophies that are taught in that cult-like that are really hard to break sometimes because they're kind of molding your brain or your philosophies or your way of life in certain and different areas. Now, there's sometimes where you can apply those principles towards a realistic business. Like you could apply some of those really warped, twisted philosophies towards your own business and make it work, you know, being totally committed to your own business and the idea of residual income in your own business. So if it's applied to the right thing, it could be very powerful, but when it's applied to smoke and dust and, you know, a fake business model, then it's devastating because you were always chasing that dream. So do you want to address any of the philosophies that might have stuck that you were taught that were predatory in nature or cult-like in nature?
Well, regress for just a second, you know, the most extreme thing that we were taught was that every negative thought that you have about this business is put there by the enemy, and the enemy was Satan. And you would hear after we were sleep deprived at about 3 a.m, you know, I remember there was a night out by Diamond Doug Weir at an Omaha pizza joint, and his whole speech was fighting the enemy. And if your mind isn't, if you don't have this clairvoyant vision, or if you have any doubts about this business, it is the devil that is attacking you. And I mean, I could not sleep. Every time I had thoughts or something did not feel right, I would think I was being attacked by Satan. And I was in one of the most extreme groups. And actually, it got so extreme that Larry Winters referred to this league that I was in as a bunch of weirdos, and he actually had to come into Des Moines and do a night out because it was too extreme for Larry. That's how toxic it was.
So there was a religious, so you're talking about a real serious religious overtone as well.
Oh, gosh. In our group, yes. I mean, the religious overtone, and then, you know, my upline, who's still in, we would be coming home on a bus off of a function. And every Sunday morning in our group, you know, they would have a non-denominational service where people would come forward and accept Jesus. And I remember everybody got, you know, everybody had a chance to speak on the bus ride. And this guy, Ryan, you know, he got up there and said, you know, I did not know why I'm still building this business. But then the tears were flowing down. And he goes, on a Sunday morning, said, my purpose and the reason came to me, and I'm building this for Christ. And he's not an emerald. Has not made any kind of money or any real money. And 23 years later, he's still in the hamster wheel building this business. And it absolutely boggles my mind.
The reason why I kind of snickered a little bit when you said what you said, it was a non-denominational service, but it's never to push Allah or somebody else. It's always
Buddha,
to push.
Right.
It's always to push Christian, and I'm not, and I'm Roman Catholic, so I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the religion, but it's always the non-denominational thing to make sure we push you into the religion that we're focused on. So it was.
Right.
So it's.
Yeah.
Yep. So.
Yeah.
And that was another. That was another part of the
Christian.
Yeah. Non-denominational. So we can focus you on the relation or the religion that we're going to focus on. So that lasted about 3 seconds, you know, non-denominational, and then it was always back to whatever they were pushing. Now, by the way, I grew up Roman Catholic. I understand people, and I respect people, by the way, the core values of many people based on religion. I'd rather have those core values based on religion than other things, if you know what I mean. So the reality is there's a lot of good stuff there. But when it's so twisted, and so it's twisted for the benefit of staying with Amway, having nothing to do with the religion, so it's absolutely insane. And then you could almost look at the people with the wide eyes and that wild stare when they talk about those negative comments or negative voices you might hear or negative things as being the Satan himself. I'm like, oh my. This is kind of extreme.
To your point, so I lived a year in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I was traveling back to Omaha, you know, monthly for, so their Monday night meeting in Omaha was at the Marriott. So I'd purposely stay there. I'd grab a cocktail, and I would observe these Amway people walking in and out of the meeting. And what you just described is spot on. They had a blank stare in their eyes. I came across my former upline, who's now 43 years old. I was in business with him when he was 20, and he had the same blank stare. They are ambots. They are robots that have no enlightenment and no awakening, and they're so programmed. You stare into their eyes and you see it. And I was sitting with my girlfriend. I said, watch this. And she was just stunned what we were observing.
So your parents went to a pretty extreme measure to try to get you out of this. There was their own version of an intervention, I'm guessing. So you want to tell us a little bit more about that? Because there had to be something that led up to that.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, I would come home from college and tell my parents they were possessed by the devil. My dad had a successful corporate career. I told him jobs were of Satan, and I would spill an all. I mean, you know, I'm a very extreme person, you know, and I've had that personality. And So my mother got on the internet and she literally started doing a whole lot of research. The first couple guys that she put me on the phone, like one of them claimed that Paul Miller wasn't making any money. No, that's BS. Paul's a crown. We know what kind of money Paul was bringing in with the tool scam. But then she did find Rick Ross, who was a legitimate guy. And back in 2000, they spent $6,000 for an intervention. And, you know, you talk about return on investment. If they never hired Rick, I don't know. You know, would I still be in today? I'd hope not, but you never know. You know, it was probably $6,000, not only to save me tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and years of my life. And so very expensive, but that was probably the best investment that anybody's ever put into myself.
I'm sure you profusely thank them for that.
Yes, that's the understatement.
So here you are, a young kid. Young kid before Amway, and I don't know who you were, so I'm going to guess you were just like every other young 18-year-old kid. And, you know, throw guy in there as well, so, you know, doing stuff, whatever that means. And then all of a sudden you join Amway, and did you ever accuse your dad of working for Satan before Amway?
No. No, you're right. No, I never did. So, you know, and, you know, really I was not the typical kid. I would always be around adult conversations. You know, I was, you know, and eventually I started up a fairly large company in the secondary ticket business, but I was scalping tickets when I was 16, 17 or 18. So I was entrepreneur-like. And yes, was there a lot of the discipline and a lot of things I learned at Amway that did help? Yes, without a doubt. I've been self-employed since I was 22, had businesses fail and, you know, had some success along the way. But, yeah, it was – no, I was not saying things like Satan was in charge of your job. That only came after Amway.
So you touched on some of the things – I'm sorry, Scott, I'll just make this one point. You touched on some of the things that I had mentioned a little bit earlier. Some of the principles, when applied to the right business or applied to a business, can really be helpful. And some of the lessons you learned, when applied to something that was legit and on a solid foundation, was fine. But unless you were going to be part of the tool scam, you were never going to be able to apply those principles to the Amway business model, the Amway comp plan, to be able to get the lifestyle that you were looking for during any reasonable time frame following that failed business model, unless you became part of the tool scam itself.
Well, the thing is, it's very simple. When I started up a secondary ticket company, I knew exactly how the profit was generated. I had a platform. I had an office for Nebraska football fans that could not attend a game, had extra tickets. They'd come to me, sell them, and I would resell it. When I was in Amway, I thought the business model was to recruit people to sell soap. And that's not the case at all. That's what I was spending my time doing. In reality, what's the purpose? Where am I driving the profit? And the profit was to try to get me to pay in until I go platinum, keep recruiting others under a false premise. So when you don't even know the truth of what you're really doing, or the mission's all jaded or unfocused and the truth is hidden, it's going to blow up. I had no idea what the core profit was in Amway. The other businesses, yes, I knew what the core profit was in owning a secondary ticket company or owning a IT company that was subcontracting. These Amway people are clueless, and that's a huge reason for the failure, because they're selling soap when in reality it's selling false hope and dreams.
And John, did Rick Ross talk to you about the tool scam, the tool profit, or did you learn that years later?
So, you know, when I was in, my upline, who's now Diamond, you know, he flat out told me there was money in tools. But you know, I didn't critically think the way I am about it now, and I didn't really quite understand it was a deceptive trade practice. Rick did not know that much about Amway and didn't go that deep. What Rick knew a lot about was dangerous organizations and cults. So basically the time that Rick spent in my parents' basement in Omaha, he really covered about the cult-like and dangerous leaders and signs of an organization. And that was the reason I left. And then later, as I, you know, connected with guys like Scott, and, you know, I figured that out in about 2005, that was the core of the profit.
Yeah, so it was long after you left that you realized you were really in a tool recruitment business, not a Amway soap recruitment business. and actually,
right.
A lot of people don't know that. You know, the general public doesn't know that. And also, a lot of former Amway IBOs don't know that. They just don't know it. They don't realize that the real money for the upline is the tools. And it causes them to operate at a net loss until they get to about platinum, which I think is not a coincidence. That's when we start getting paid the tool profit money. So,
right.
And I just wanted to make a comment on Winters real quick. You know, Winters is known as one of the more militant, hardcore guys in Amway. Bill Britt was too, but I think Larry Winters takes it up a notch, and I think if I had to pick one organization that was just the most sort of military, hardcore type of a group, it would be LTD and Larry Winters. They seem to really push that stuff, like you guys were talking about earlier with the devil and all that stuff. I mean,
so,
they have no bones about making those comments. So go ahead, John.
Yeah, so Larry's big guy is Joe Markowitz. To me, Markowitz seemed more the militant guy. And, I mean, his stuff comes right out of a military playbook of saving the country and patriotism. And, you know, off the record, I had heard this from a former Emerald that Markowitz and Winters supposedly do not get along. And I could actually see that. They're really different type of personalities. And Markowitz would tell people to never take a vacation. And Larry was hearing about some of the hardcore stuff. So he flew into Des Moines. He did a night out and said, "Who told you not to take a vacation?" He says, "Take a vacation when you're in Amway." So it's really weird because I Markowitz was an IBM executive, much more fit guy, wears a suit better, very polished. I've always thought he was more the CEO and Larry was kind of right time, right place, and had a different way of the manipulation. So I think the Winters and Markowitz, I think Joe is that Joe Markowitz is just as much a part of the LTD thing as Larry is.
Yeah, that's interesting. That reminds me of my Navy days, the typical relationship of the commanding officer, you know, the guy that's in charge of the ship, and his right-hand man called the XO, executive officer. Usually there's a good cop, bad cop thing going on there where the XO is the bad cop and the captain is the good cop. And it sounds a little bit like what you're talking about with Larry Winters and Markowitz, is they're playing that good cop, bad cop. And you know, part of it's probably too, you know, Winters probably realizes that if Markowitz gets too out of control, that he's going to chase off a bunch of people. And then there's going to be, there's going to be less people buying tools. so there's, you know, some practical concern there too. It's like, hey, Joe, don't get too hardcore. Let me come in and smooth things out a little bit because, you know, you're causing too many people to drop out too soon. I mean, we know they're going to drop out, but, you know, let them buy some tools first. Let them buy some products. Then they can drop out because they're going to drop out anyway when they go broke. So, you know, whether they drop out when they go broke or, you know, when you're hardcore with them, there's probably not a huge difference there. There probably is a little bit of a difference where people get, you know, insulted and they leave earlier, but probably not a huge difference between that approach and a more, let's call it, softer approach, which is kind of what my upline had. They, and I won't say they were nice. They were just not as forceful as I've talked to, you know, several people over the years from LTD, and man, LTD is all in. I mean, it's it is hardcore, no doubt. But go ahead, John.
No, it's you know, the other thing too is the amount of diamond divorces in LTD is just staggering. My old upline diamond in Des Moines, wife filed on him. Jake Baker is now divorced. Campbell Haig. I mean, it's you know, and they're happening at the highest level. So I think at some point, these spouses are waking up and saying, wow, there's something not right here.
Yeah, you do get curious about whether, you know, all this hardcore stuff is causing friction, or maybe the spouse is going, you know what, we're doing a scam here. I don't really like that. You kind of wonder,
you know,
what the division is between those things, or something different even. You know, who knows what's going on.
Right. And I kind of think the latter.
Yeah, but that's one of the things also that Worldwide Dream Builders, which is mostly on the West Coast, that's sort of their, you know, bragging right is they preserve marriages, and you know, they'll improve your marriage. You know, while they're stealing your money, they'll improve your marriage. So
yeah,
but that's an attractive to a lot of people, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, don't have great marriages, and so when they hear that, they go, well, this is, you know, an added bonus to a business, you know, and it's a good selling point. So, you know, there's all those kinds of things that get factored in as well. So let me ask you, John, your upline, I don't care if you tell names, either way, you know, it's fine with me, but just, you know, tell us what they did for a living before Amway. And I guess some of them are still having to do that because they haven't made any money, or they're probably still losing money at Amway. But if you could just kind of describe your upline up to winners, if you can remember.
Yeah. So, you know, my personal sponsor, Chad, you know, Chad was one of those hardcore guys. You know, I think he had a pretty minimal paying job working as a financial advisor at TD Ameritrade. And I tracked him. You know, he was a guy that told me I was off base, that Satan was messing up my head. I'd see him around the campus at the University of Nebraska. He wouldn't say hi. And so throughout the years, I had a connection with his brother. He was in teen years, and he quit in 2012. And he quit. He went Q12. He regressed. So a guy that burned 14 years of his life and did nothing. The two guys, Brian and Ryan, who are above Chad, they had been in since 1997. Brian was a Q12. He is a platinum. I saw him at the open meeting. He works a full-time job. He's a mortgage broker. I mean, I heard things from Brian back in 2000 that we were going to retire him from a gas station. Emerald was right around the corner. He was going to be a diamond in 2003, and he wanted to have such a big family, he was looking forward to being a crown ambassador. He's a platinum after 23 years. Ryan was the guy on the bus that says this was his ministry. And there was three other guys. It was the same stuff that, you know, we're going to be rich in 5 years. We're going to have our own functions. You know, you'd hear this stuff night after night. And so there was about three or four guys who absolutely quit that did this business for 10 to 15 years, all in my upline who I tracked, and they're all gone. And, you know, are they cutting a residual check? I don't think so, because, you know, I'll mention the upline diamond's name. He's a big enough pin. It was Mike Wechter. Wechter had you know, he'd tell his team or his leaders that you'd want to force some people to quit because you'd want the bigger pins to be personally sponsored. So there was three or four guys between Ryan and Mike. So I think he forced them out, gave them a small buyout. And here's the thing about diamond. Mike went diamond in 2005. And he only got there because he would force the guy out and inherit platinum legs. And I know that Joe Markowitz went to bat for him and got like one leg that was 4,000, another one that was 2,500, and he was able to stack them into one leg to go diamond. Well, he's not requalified, so he hasn't been on the trip ever since. And since his biggest legs were the Brett Harris, Paul Kopecky legs that have gone diamond, after his wife filed for divorce on him, Harris and Kopecky pulled out of his group. So I don't know if they're registered under somebody else. And then Mike's upline were his in-laws or his brother-in-laws. There was three people between him and Joe Markowitz, and everybody's gone. So if we drew out Mike's organization, which I'm very familiar with over the last 20 years, what you would find is utter devastation. The amount of money lost, the amount of time that these families lost with their kids. We could probably draw out 20,000 IBOs that spent at least a year, and you'd have maybe three active businesses that net over $150,000 a year. And
yeah,
that's
typical.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm not a Peter knows this. I'm not a big Robert Fitzpatrick fan, but I did hear a YouTube video earlier today where he made a very good point, and he doesn't do this very often, so I need to give him his props, because Robert and I have gone head-to-head over the years, and I just don't agree with him on most of what he says. But he said something I thought was really good insight, and that is, you know, people throw around the statistic that only 1% of the people on Amway make money and the other 99% lose money, which is pretty close to being accurate. But it's even worse than that, because it kind of gets back to what you're saying here, John, is that's kind of a snapshot, right? You take 1 year, you know, and you take a snapshot, about 1% of the people are making a profit. The other 99 are losing money. Well, if you go to year two, almost all of those 99%, or a very large percentage of them, are different people. And all those new people are losing money. And so now you've got maybe 0.5%. If you include all the people that have ever been in, you know, year one and year two, and it just keeps going down. As you go to years 3, 4, and 5, it goes down to 0.33%, 0.25%, 0.25%. You know, you can go down to about 0.1% after 10 years. Or, you know, if you count all the people that were ever involved, they got in and got out. Because the people at the top generally don't change out. You know, when they're, you know, when they're at the top, they generally stay there. There's exceptions to that, but, you know, that's a pretty good thumb rule. So really the percentage of people that lose money at Amway is much greater than 99%. It's like 0.1% actually make a profit when you look at it over time, because all those people joined and left, like you're talking about, and they probably lost money. So I just thought that was a good insight that Robert had. I don't give him compliments very often, but I'm an honest guy. If I see something that he had a good insight on, I'd like to mention it. But it kind of fits in with what you're saying, you know, all those people that were in and they're out.
Yeah, you know, like in the case of Mike Wechter, you know, I know at one time he had 3,000 people going to function. The average person stays for about a year. His group isn't this size. But easily, I could probably say he's had 10 to 15,000 people who have stayed in for a year. That's probably, if we were to look at those who invested more than a year. And then in that business, I know of five people that have, you know, he cracked, you know, and again, the Brent Harris leg pulled out, but there was only two people, you know, in one leg, you had 1,000 going to function. He cut two diamonds out of there, and there's one emerald. So you got maybe three people in that leg. And then he recently broke a diamond in Brad Brendis, and he has two emeralds in that leg. So we're talking, and outside of that, nobody else has hit Emerald outside of those two lakes. So if you're in one of those lakes, 3, 4, or 5, we are talking six-figure businesses in 25 years of being in business and having well over 50. I think my 15,000 number is light. I think if we really looked into it, we might be talking about 30,000 people who have come and gone that invested their time, effort, and money. 6 out of 30,000 that can net a six-figure profit. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. When you think about it over time and all the new people coming and going and losing money during that time, it's much less than 1% that actually make a net profit. I'm not even talking about six figures. I mean a net profit.
If we go to a net profit, I could maybe agree that there's been 100, but that certainly doesn't even put us close to 1%. Most of these platinums are Q12s. I highly doubt, they're getting a $20,000 bonus check, but you can go to some of these sites like Brad Brendis, who just got a diamond. You can look on Brendis International. He tells you what these guys make on a monthly basis. It's $2,000 or $3,000 a month. But at that Q12 level, not only are you doing the regular functions, Joe Markowitz is having these functions out at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs. I've stayed there. That's $500 a night. That's coming out of these guys' pockets. So as you're getting to the higher pins, all that extra money that you're bringing in is going right back out for more leadership programs. I really get ahead is Emerald. I don't even think Platinum or Q12. I think Markowitz is scamming them, and he's just having more expensive conferences and making a kickback on every single one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the Wisconsin Attorney General did a study. This is back in the 80s, but I think it's still applicable. In fact, it's probably – worse now because there's more ways that they make their tool profit. But the Wisconsin Attorney General found that, and he looked at only at the platinum level. They were called directs back then, but only at the direct level in Wisconsin. I think it was around 100 people at that time, and he looked at their profit and how much money that they had to spend to make that profit. In other words, Amway pays you your gross profit, and if you're making any tool money, that's gross profit. But then how much money did you have to spend to make that with all the travel and, the meetings and the tools and the hotels and the meals and all that stuff? It really adds up fast. And
or the depreciation, which they don't factor in. That's huge, too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But, the Attorney General found that directs, which are called platinum now, they averaged about negative $900 a year. In other words, they were almost breaking even. They were pulling in probably $2,000 or $3,000 a year gross, but then they were also pumping out almost the same amount in overhead costs, and they were just about to break even. And so you really have to get to that level just to break even. And of course, when I say break even, that's after however many years it took you to get to that level when you were operating in a net loss. And so
Yes. Just
because you're breaking even as a platinum doesn't mean that, you're net positive. You're net positive at that point, but you spent probably tens of thousands of dollars just to get to that point. And now you have to, make more of a net profit over the years just to break even overall. So it's a crazy.
And, if we look at the
math,
opportunity cost, as we were talking to Peter about, they're not factoring that in. So let's say it takes you 10 years to go Emerald, or you're breaking even as a platinum. You got 10 years of spending $10,000 a year in the Amway business that could be earning interest in the stock market. You're losing out on those returns. And that's what
factored in. Or you could be doing that, and or you could be advancing your career with a job or a business.
Yes.
And that's an opportunity cost not to mention all the relationships that you ruin and, you know, the time with your family that's lost. And, you know, I've said this before on the show, that's why I do this and other things, is because I know I lost a lot of money over those dozen years, but I also lost a lot of time. My youngest son was almost 3 years old, and my younger son was in the oven, as they say, when we joined Amway. And for the next dozen years, I took a lot of time away from, you know, attending to them, thinking I was building a legitimate business, not realizing it was a total scam. And so, you know, my sort of mission is to educate people, and I see it in three groups. You know, it's the general population, it's the government, let's say, you know, both the legislative and executive branches, and then it's also the media. You know, the media is clueless about this stuff. You see stories from time to time, and they just don't hit the mark. I mean, they just don't get it. They don't understand. And I can't tell you how many, you know, reporters I've sent emails to for their stories going, hey, we need to talk. And I very rarely get any response. And so there's just a huge lack of education out there as far as, you know, how these things really operate. And even a lot of the critics that you see on YouTube, they don't, and they are complaining about legitimate gripes, but they don't really hit the mark as far as identifying the illegal activities and reporting those to the FTC. That's where they just kind of, you know, vent and, you know, talk about things, but don't really hit the mark as far as I'm concerned. Well, John, I'd like to ask you, because I try to ask every guest this when they're on the show, because we talked about a lot of things, and was there anything that we did not talk about that you were thinking about before the show, going to yourself, yeah, I need to make sure I mention this? Is there anything that we haven't covered yet that you wanted to talk about a little bit that we just haven't gotten to?
You know, the only other thing, and, you know, I think that we hit the mark on the tools, and, you know, when I'm a guest or I talk to people, I like to give specific examples that people can relate to. But, you know, I just would like to share one thing. You know, Scott, you talked about your purpose in life, and, you know, you've certainly devoted a lot more hours than I have. And, you know, I asked myself the question, hey, this only affected me for about a year and a quarter. Why am I invested time in this? Why have I sat down and spent the limited amount of time that I have? And, you know, I have nightmares. I consider myself very fortunate. I really think that I would have lost years of career earnings, been bankrupt, been broke, and I certainly wouldn't have started up a successful secondary ticket company at 21 if I didn't have a mom who was very intelligent and parents that had means to hire this cult deprogrammer. So I look at the fact I think I got a very fortunate break, and to me, that's my driver. You know, I've woken up with a cold sweat and asked myself, what if this never happened? And I don't think it would have been a positive result at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, Peter, we've had a number of guests on this show, and particularly I think the ones that got started earlier in life, because I got started at 33. And so, you know, I had some life experiences. And the second I heard about the tool scam, it was an instantaneous decision for me. We've talked to so many people, particularly the ones that get involved when they're very young and don't have very many life experiences. It's really hard for them. It's hard to walk away from the social element. It's hard for them to, you know, just think they're making the right decision. And a lot of them don't even know about the tool scam, but they're broke and they just have to leave. But they really sort of regret the decision, and it really bothers them that they left. And for me, it was very simple. You know, you guys have been lying to me for a dozen years. I'm out of here. I had no second thoughts. You know, that totally, you know, popped the bubble, so to speak. And I had no problems starting, you know, the day after I heard about the tool scam, you know, being online and educating people, because I don't want other families to go through what I did, and millions of others, you know, including you, John, you know, to varying degrees. We all went through the same thing, you know, whether you're in for a long time or short time, you're young, you're old, whatever, it really doesn't matter. We all got scammed. And I don't want other people to get scammed. I don't want them to lose the money. And to me, more importantly, the time, that lost time that, you know, Bill Gates could give me all his money and I would have a pretty good life going forward, but I can't turn the clock back. You know, I can't go back to my older son being 3 years old and spend more time with him, because it's gone. Time is gone. And just like you were saying, with all these people, you know, over the years that have been at it for, you know, 10, maybe 10, 15, even 20 years, and they've got nothing to show for it except debt. You know, I think it's a tribute to you that you care about people enough, even though you were in for a relatively short time and, you know, relatively minor loss compared to a lot of other people. You just care. And that's what I, you know, really admire and appreciate about you is you're one of those guys that, you know, you just care, and there's not enough of us, unfortunately. And so we need to find more people like us and become a bigger voice, I think. Peter, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, it's all great information, and I really appreciate John being here. So for those people that are going to be interested, we're going to make sure that John has a website on our guest page. So John's last name is spelled, John, spell your last name so people can find you if they want to find the contact information and everything else about you.
Yep, it's John Uhrich, U-H-R-I-C-H, and then we're going to put my email on the contact page. Is that correct?
That's fine, yep. You can give out your email. If you want to give out your email now, you can.
Yeah, sure. You know, just give a personal email. It's John, J-O-H-N, 68144 at yahoo.com. And yeah, if anybody's listening or has loved ones, you know, in this business, I've done interventions. I know Scott's has definitely talked to people, and I would certainly welcome opinions, comments, and would be happy to reach out.
Excellent information. So Scott, I'll let you wrap it up. And thank you, John, for being here.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, John. This has really been very interesting and insightful, and we're glad that there's more people out there like yourself. And I think we just need to be more influential. You know, we just need to keep doing what we're doing and figure out other ways of getting more attention. I believe that I'm an all-of-the-above kind of guy. You know, I don't think there's one magic bullet. So I think it's educating the public. I think it's you know, talking to the politicians, whether it's the executive branch, you know, the regulators, or the legislative branch, or the attorney generals. I mean, it's really, you know, wherever we can find a soft spot, so to speak, the media, maybe we can somehow get the media trained a little bit. Because, you know, if they are educated, then they're going to start putting out more of the information that people really need to hear in order to stay away from MLM scams. That's really important for them to do that, to do their job, basically, is the way I look at it. You know, just like the regulators, they need to do their job. Picking off a MLM every year or two just doesn't cut it when there's hundreds of them out there. And they all operate so similarly. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, as they say. So anyway,
you know,
I just want to thank John. Did you have something else? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know, the one thing that I would quickly add, and Scott, I know we had this discussion, but, you know, my experience in a highly regulated business is if we're going to file complaints, look to the Consumer Protection Division of an attorney general and file it against the tool company. File it against the upline diamond, whether that be Wechter International, Winters, Markowitz, whatever association. And I think the more specific we are, I think that that we can definitely have some legs if, you know, if we look and say, you know, especially one in North Carolina against LTD or wherever these motivational systems are located.
Yeah, good point. I think that's a real good idea to target because, you know, we know that the Amways are huge. They've got massive influence politically. They've got massive finances, and they can have a lot of influence behind the scenes, whereas these diamond organizations, not so much. And
yeah,
certainly, you know, even a state attorney general going after one of these organizations, you know, the diamond would definitely meet their match with the state attorney general. They couldn't intimidate them like Amway might be able to, or, you know, pay them off or whatever they do so they don't take action. I don't know what's going on, if it's incompetence, if it's payoffs, if it's, you know, this revolving door that we see going between the government and these companies. You know, they go back and forth in both directions over the years, and who knows what's going on. But I believe that if enough people are loud enough, we can cause change. That's my core belief. And that's why, you know, I'd like to always encourage people to write a complaint to FTC.gov. That's Federal Trade Commission, FTC.gov. It's on their front page on how to submit a complaint. You can use your name or you can remain anonymous. You know, I don't think there's anything that you should be afraid of by putting your name in there, but you know, if you want to remain anonymous, it's probably less impactful, but it's still going to count. And so, you know, whatever you do, file that complaint either in person with your name or anonymously. You know, either way, I think the name is better, but either way is certainly acceptable. So anyway, thanks, John. This has been a great show. And Peter, we'll get together again next Saturday.
That's it. Well, thanks everybody for being here. John, thanks again, and we'll catch you next time on Building Fortunes Radio.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.